Hello, and welcome to Mr. Doom, and welcome to another episode of Scary Stories. My name is Frank, and I've been a truck driver for over 20 years. I've hauled cargo through rainstorms, snow, and endless stretches of highway. But there's one night I'll never forget, a night that taught me a lesson I'll carry for the rest of my life. It was late October, and I was driving through a quiet stretch of highway in Montana. The night was cold, the kind of chill that seeps into your bones, and the road ahead was pitch black. I'd been driving for hours and was planning to stop at a rest area about 20 miles down the road. That's when I saw her. She was standing on the shoulder, illuminated by the faint glow of my headlights. A young woman, maybe in her 20s, wearing a thin hoodie and jeans that weren't enough for the freezing night air. She had her thumb out, her other hand clutching a small backpack. I've always had a rule about not picking up hitchhikers. It's not safe, and my company frowns on it. But something about her standing there, shivering and alone, made me pause. She looked desperate. Against my better judgment, I slowed the truck and pulled over. I rolled down the window and called out, "Where are you headed?" "Just up the road," she said, her voice trembling. "Can you give me a ride?" I hesitated for a moment, then unlocked the passenger door. "Hop in." She climbed into the cab, and I noticed how pale she looked, her hands shaking as she clutched her backpack. I cranked up the heat and handed her a bottle of water. "Thanks," she muttered, taking a sip. As I got back on the highway, I tried to make small talk to ease the tension. "What's your name?" I asked. "Ellie," she said softly, staring out the window. "You okay, Ellie?" I asked. She nodded but didn't say anything. The silence was heavy, and I started to regret stopping. After a few minutes, she broke the silence. "Do you ever feel like you're being followed?" Her question caught me off guard. "What do you mean?" She turned to look at me, her eyes wide with fear. "There was a car, back there. I think it was following me." I glanced in the rearview mirror. The highway behind us was empty, just a long stretch of darkness. "There's no one there," I said. She shook her head. "They were there earlier. They've been following me for miles." Her voice was shaking, and I couldn't tell if she was scared or just paranoid. I kept driving, trying to shake off the unease creeping over me. A few minutes later, she gasped. "There, do you see it?" she said, pointing to the side mirror. I glanced in the mirror and saw headlights in the distance, far back but steadily gaining on us. "That's them," she said, her voice barely above a whisper. The car behind us sped up, its headlights growing brighter. I tightened my grip on the wheel, my mind racing. "Ellie, what's going on?" I asked. "They're after me," she said, her voice trembling. "Please, you have to keep driving." The car got closer, its headlights now right behind us, but it didn't try to pass. It just stayed there, tailgating my rig. Something about the situation felt wrong. Ellie's nervous energy, the car behind us. I glanced at her backpack, which she was clutching tightly to her chest. "What's in the bag?" I asked. Her eyes darted to me and she shook her head. "Nothing, just clothes." The way she said it didn't convince me. The car behind us suddenly swerved into the oncoming lane, pulling up beside the truck. I glanced out the window and saw two men in the car, their faces obscured by shadows. The driver gestured for me to pull over. I shook my head, gripping the wheel tighter. "Not happening." The car swerved back behind us, its headlights flashing. Ellie was panicking now, breathing heavily and clutching her bag even tighter. "Who are they?" I demanded. "I don't know," she said, tears streaming down her face. "Just keep driving." I grabbed my CB radio and called for help, giving my location and describing the situation. "They're trying to run me off the road," I told the dispatcher. The car behind us swerved again, this time trying to nudge the back of the trailer. The rig shook and I fought to keep it steady. "Ellie, you need to tell me what's going on," I said, my voice firm. She hesitated, then blurted out, "They're with me." I stared at her, not sure I'd heard her right. "What?" "They're with me," she repeated, her voice breaking. "I didn't think they'd follow us, I swear." The realization hit me like a punch to the gut. This wasn't some random hitchhiker running from danger. This was a setup. The car behind us swerved again, harder this time, and I knew I couldn't keep this up much longer. I spotted an exit up ahead and made a snap decision. "Hold on," I said, yanking the wheel and taking the off-ramp at the last second. The car behind us overshot the exit, and I saw its taillights disappear in the rearview mirror. I pulled into a truck stop and slammed the brakes, throwing the rig into park. "Out," I said, turning to Ellie. "Frank, please, out," I shouted. She climbed out of the cab, her hands trembling. I locked the doors and watched as she stood there, tears streaming down her face. A few minutes later, the police arrived. I told them everything, and they took her into custody. It turned out Ellie and her accomplices had been targeting truckers, luring them into remote areas for ambushes. I was lucky to have gotten away with just a scare. To this day, I don't stop for hitchhikers. I'd like to think I was helping someone in need that night, but the truth is, not everyone on the road has good intentions. Sometimes, the people who need help the most are the ones you should be running from. My name is Jack, and I've been a truck driver for the better part of 15 years. I've hauled loads across every state, seen my fair share of strange things, but there's one night that still gives me chills whenever I think about it. It was late December, bitter cold, and I was hauling a load of electronics from Chicago to Denver. I'd been driving for hours and decided to pull into a small, nearly deserted truck stop somewhere in Iowa. It was the kind of place you'd only find on the back roads, a couple of pumps, a dingy diner, and a few flickering streetlights barely illuminating the lot. I parked my rig toward the back, away from the few other trucks scattered around, and turned off the engine. The silence was a welcome change from the constant hum of the highway. I planned to grab a quick bite and catch a few hours of sleep in the cab before hitting the road again. After locking up, I started walking toward the diner when I heard it, a faint thud coming from behind my truck. At first, I thought it was just the wind or maybe something shifting in the trailer. But as I took another step, I heard it again, this time louder, like someone was banging on the inside of the trailer. I froze. The cargo I was hauling was sealed tight with a padlock, and there was no way anyone should have been back there. My mind raced with possibilities. Maybe someone had tried to break in at a previous stop, or maybe it was just something loose inside. Grabbing my flashlight from the cab, I walked around to the back of the trailer. I shined the light on the lock. It was still intact. "Hello?" I called out, my voice echoing in the cold night air. No response. I was about to chalk it up to my imagination when I heard it again, a muffled voice this time. "Help! Please!" My stomach dropped. I unlocked the trailer and carefully swung the doors open, shining the flashlight inside. At first, all I saw were pallets of boxes stacked neatly in rows. Then, in the far corner, something moved. It was a girl. She was huddled behind one of the pallets, her face pale and her eyes wide with fear. She couldn't have been more than 16 or 17, dressed in a torn hoodie and jeans that looked like they hadn't been washed in weeks. "Who are you?" I asked, keeping my voice calm. "What are you doing in there?" "Please don't call him," she said, her voice trembling. "He'll find me." I stepped closer, lowering the flashlight so it wasn't shining directly in her face. "Call who? What's going on?" She didn't answer right away, just shook her head and clutched her knees to her chest. "Listen," I said, trying to sound reassuring. "You're safe now. No one's going to hurt you. Just tell me what happened." After a moment, she looked up at me, tears streaming down her face. "I ran away," she said. "I've been hiding for days. He's looking for me. I know he is." "Who's looking for you?" I pressed. She hesitated, then whispered, "The man who took me." My heart sank. I told her to stay put while I grabbed a blanket from the cab. When I came back, she had shifted closer to the edge of the trailer, still keeping an eye on the darkness around us. "Let me call the police," I said. "They'll help you." "No," she said, panicking. "He has people watching. If they find out I'm here..." "No one's going to find you," I interrupted. "Not here. But we need to let someone know what's going on." Reluctantly, she nodded. I called 911, explaining the situation as calmly as I could. The dispatcher assured me that officers were on their way and told me to keep her safe until they arrived. We waited in the cab, and I locked the doors just to be safe. The girl, She told me her name was Lisa, stayed quiet, glancing out the window every few seconds, like she expected someone to appear out of the shadows. "Do you know how long you've been gone?" I asked gently. She shook her head. "I lost track. Weeks, maybe months." She didn't say much more, and I didn't push her. When the police finally arrived, they took Lisa into their car to talk to her. One of the officers stayed behind to ask me questions, where I'd picked her up, if I'd noticed anyone following me. After giving my statement, I asked what they'd found out. The officer sighed. "She's been reported missing for over 3 months. Her family thought she was dead." I felt a wave of relief knowing she was alive, but the officer's next words sent a chill down my spine. "She mentioned a man who'd been holding her," he said. "Claims he's been tracking her since she escaped. If that's true, he could be closer than we think." I glanced around the truck stop, suddenly hyper-aware of how exposed we were. The officer must have noticed my unease. "We're keeping her in protective custody until we can figure out what's going on," he said. "You did the right thing calling us." After they left, I sat in the cab for a long time, staring out at the empty highway. Every shadow, every flicker of movement in the distance made my skin crawl. I finished the haul the next day, but that night stayed with me. I couldn't stop thinking about Lisa, what she'd been through, and what could have happened if I hadn't stopped at that truck stop. A few weeks later, I got a call from the police. They'd caught the man who'd been holding her, thanks to the information she gave them. It turns out, Lisa had been lured away from her hometown by a man posing as a friend online. He'd kept her captive, moving her from place to place until she managed to escape. To this day, I check the locks on my trailer twice before every stop, and I don't think I'll ever look at an empty road the same way again. Because sometimes, the most haunting things you find on the road aren't just in your imagination, they're real. My name's Mike, and I've been a truck driver for over a decade. I've hauled cargo through every type of terrain and weather you can imagine. But one night, about 2 years ago, I took a last-minute job that nearly cost me everything. It was a Friday evening, and I was wrapping up paperwork at the depot after a long day when Tony, one of the dispatchers, approached me. "Mike, I've got a favor to ask," he said. "We've got a last-minute job that needs handling. One of the drivers bailed, and it's an easy run. Short distance, good money." Normally, I don't take late jobs, but Tony was insistent. The cargo was a load of electronics, and the drop-off was about an hour away at an industrial lot. It sounded simple enough, and the extra cash was tempting. "You'll be back before midnight," Tony assured me with a grin. Against my better judgment, I agreed. I loaded the truck, checked everything twice, and hit the road. The drive was uneventful at first, quiet highways and empty roads. But as I got closer to the destination, the route took me down a narrow, poorly lit back road. I double-checked the address Tony had given me, and it matched. Still, the location seemed odd for an industrial lot. When I finally pulled into the lot, my stomach turned. Instead of a proper warehouse or a bustling yard, it was a gravel clearing surrounded by trees. A single rusted van was parked near the edge, but there were no lights, no signage, no signs of activity. I pulled the truck to a stop and called Tony to confirm the address. "It's correct," he said. "The lot's tucked away, but it's legit. Shouldn't be any issues." Feeling a bit more reassured, I grabbed my clipboard, climbed out of the cab, and walked toward the back of the trailer. The van was still, its windows dark, and I didn't see anyone around. I unlocked the trailer and started to check the cargo when I heard footsteps behind me. I turned to see two men walking toward me from the direction of the van. They were dressed in dark clothes, their hands shoved into their jacket pockets. "Are you guys here for the delivery?" I asked, trying to keep my voice steady. "Yeah," one of them said flatly. "Let's get it unloaded." Something about them put me on edge. They didn't look like warehouse workers. No clipboards, no uniforms, and no equipment to move the cargo. "Can I see some ID or paperwork to confirm?" I asked. The first guy's expression hardened. "You don't need that," he said. "Just unload the truck." "Sorry," I said, standing my ground. "Company policy, I can't release the cargo without verification. The second man took a step closer, his eyes narrowing. You asking too many questions, buddy, he said, his voice low and threatening. I felt a knot of tension in my chest. Look, I'm just doing my job, I said, taking a step back toward the truck. The first man pulled out a phone, pretending to call someone. The second man circled around me. I reached for my own phone to call dispatch, but before I could dial, I felt a hard blow to the back of my head. Pain exploded behind my eyes, and the world tilted. I stumbled, trying to stay upright, but another shove sent me to the ground. My head hit the gravel, and everything went black. When I came to, my head was throbbing, and the side of my face was sticky with blood. It took me a moment to realize I was lying near the back of the trailer. The truck was open, and the cargo, every box, was gone. I sat up slowly, dizziness washing over me. My phone was still in my pocket, and I pulled it out with shaky hands. I dialed 911 and managed to explain what had happened, giving them the location as best as I could. Within 20 minutes, the police arrived. They checked me over, and one of the officers wrapped my head in gauze to stop the bleeding while I gave my statement. Did you see where they went? One of them asked. No, I said, my voice hoarse. They hit me, and when I woke up, they were gone. They assured me they'd start a search and told me to head back to the depot once I was cleared to drive. When I returned to the depot, Tony was waiting for me. His face went pale when he saw the bandage on my head. What the hell happened? He asked. I told him everything, the strange lot, the men, the ambush. He looked horrified, muttering that the job was supposed to be routine. As it turned out, the job had been passed to Tony by another dispatcher who'd recently been let go for questionable behavior. The same dispatcher had been working with outside contacts to set up fake deliveries and target specific loads. A week later, the police caught the men and recovered most of the stolen cargo. They admitted the ambush had been planned, and the dispatcher who had given Tony the job had been in on it. He was arrested, and Tony was fired for not vetting the job properly. I'm just glad I walked away with minor injuries. But I'll tell you this. I'll never take another job without questioning every detail. Because sometimes, the people you think you can trust are the ones putting you in the most danger. My name's Jake, and even though I'm relatively new to truck driving, just a couple of years under my belt, I've already seen my fair share of strange things on the road. The open highways have a way of showing you the unexpected, but nothing could have prepared me for what happened on one particular night. It's an experience that still sends chills down my spine. It was late October, and I was hauling a load of construction equipment through a stretch of highway in Nevada. The roads were quiet, typical for that time of night, and I was looking forward to getting to the truck stop where I planned to catch a few hours of sleep. Around 11 p.m., I noticed headlights behind me. At first, I didn't think much of it. It was common for cars to pass through these empty stretches, but this one didn't pass. Instead, it stayed behind me, maintaining a steady distance. I checked my side mirrors a few times, expecting the vehicle to eventually overtake me. But it didn't. It just stayed there, its headlights a constant presence in the darkness. After about 15 minutes, I started to feel uneasy. Something about the way the car was pacing me felt deliberate. I slowed down slightly, thinking maybe they'd pass if I wasn't driving so fast, but they slowed down too. That's when I knew something wasn't right. I decided to pull into a gas station with a diner I spotted up ahead. It wasn't a large truck stop, just a small quiet place with a few pumps and a couple of parked cars. I figured if I stopped, the car might just pass and keep going. I turned off the highway and pulled into the lot, parking my rig near the back. The SUV followed me in. My heart started racing as I watched them pull into a space near the diner. The SUV was a dark color, maybe black or dark blue, and looked well maintained. The windows were tinted so I couldn't see who was inside. Trying to stay calm, I grabbed my phone and got out of the cab. I walked toward the diner, pretending I didn't notice them. As I passed the SUV, I quickly snapped a photo of the license plate, just in case. That's when the driver's door opened. A tall man stepped out, and I felt my stomach drop. He was wearing a dark jacket and jeans, and there was something about the way he moved, deliberate, confident, that made the hairs on the back of my neck stand up. He didn't say anything, just stood there, watching me. I froze for a moment, unsure of what to do. My first instinct was to confront him, but something about his demeanor screamed danger. Instead, I turned back toward my truck, trying to act like I'd forgotten something. As I climbed back into the cab, I glanced back. He was still standing by the SUV, his eyes fixed on me. I locked the doors, started the engine, and pulled out of the lot. My hands were shaking as I got back on the highway, but I felt a wave of relief when I saw the gas station fading into the distance behind me. But it didn't last long. A few minutes later, I saw those same headlights in my mirrors. The SUV was following me again. My mind was racing. Who was this guy? What did he want? I thought about calling the police, but I didn't want to pull over in the middle of nowhere. Instead, I decided to head for the nearest truck stop I knew had a 24-hour diner and plenty of people around. The SUV stayed behind me the entire way, never getting too close, but never letting me out of sight. When I finally reached the truck stop, I pulled into a spot near the front where the lot was well lit. This time, I didn't get out of the cab. I grabbed my phone and dialed 911. The dispatcher answered quickly, and I explained the situation, giving them the license plate number and a description of the vehicle. "Stay where you are," she said. "We're sending an officer to your location." As I waited, I kept an eye on the SUV. It had pulled into the lot too, but didn't park. Instead, it idled near the entrance, as if the driver was deciding what to do next. A few minutes later, the SUV suddenly pulled out and sped away, disappearing onto the highway. The police arrived shortly after. I told them everything, from the moment I first noticed the car to the man getting out at the gas station. They took the photo of the license plate and promised to look into it. A couple of days later, I got a call from the officer handling the case. "Mr. Walker," he said, "you did the right thing reporting this. The man you described and the vehicle's plates match someone we've been looking for." My heart sank. "Looking for? What do you mean?" "He's a wanted fugitive," the officer explained. "We've been tracking him for months. He's been linked to several incidents involving truck drivers. Mostly thefts, but there's evidence of violence in some cases." I felt a chill run down my spine. The officer thanked me for coming forward and assured me they were closing in on the guy. Knowing I'd helped might have been some comfort, but I couldn't shake the thought of how close I'd come to being his next target. Although that experience was terrifying, it hasn't deterred me from truck driving. I still love being out on the open road, but it taught me a valuable lesson. Always trust your instincts and stay alert. Now, I'm much more cautious about my surroundings and the people I encounter, because you never know when a routine drive might take an unexpected and dangerous turn.